and welcome to this journalism.co.uk podcast. I'm Catalina Albanu, and this week we're going to take a look back at the main trends that shaped digital media in 2015 and see where they might lead us next year. It's that time of the year again when there's no shortage of trends and predictions for the next 12 months. In this podcast, we'll take a step back and highlight some of the trends and movements that stood out in 2015 and that could influence what media organisations will be working towards next year. We'll be exploring both the technology that has made its mark and the most popular platforms, as well as the changes in the approach to storytelling itself. And perhaps unsurprisingly, first up is the rise of 360-degree video, as more news organisations have started investing in it, whether by producing individual stories or building dedicated apps, such as NYT VR, launched by the New York Times in November. To promote the app, the outlet even sent out Google Cardboard virtual reality viewers with the print newspaper. So with Facebook and YouTube now supporting 360-degree videos and the technology to both produce such videos and watch them becoming more accessible, this format will be one to follow next year. But Glenn Mulcahy, innovation lead at Irish broadcaster RTE, thinks audiences might not be so thrilled about this development just yet.
I think for the vast majority of newsrooms, what we're going to see certainly in 2016 is more and more of these cheap pocket-sized cameras being given to journalists, particularly when they're going on foreign assignments, so that they can create an immersive version of the stories that they do. And now I say it that way because I don't think, certainly for the next 12 months anyway, that any news organization is going to jettison the usual storytelling platforms and throw all their weight into 360. I think it'll be very much a case of suck it and see, so to speak. We still don't know how the audience will ultimately respond to this. I mean, I had a great quote the other day where we did one of our first 360-degree projects about 2 weeks ago, and someone sent me a tweet saying, "Why did you shoot the floor?" And it took me about 2 minutes to register what exactly did that message mean. And then when I thought about it, I realized they were watching the video on their phone, and obviously the position they were holding their phone in meant that the phone was pointing at the ground. So in the 360-degree video, they were looking at another virtual ground. I think there probably isn't enough public awareness about what the platform is, what the platform does, and how they experience it. So one of the things that we're actually looking at the moment here in RTE is the idea of doing a big project next year related to the centenary of the Easter Rising, and maybe giving away something like Google Cardboard with their TV magazine, so that we can literally put a viewer into the hands of the audience, release it basically on YouTube. We probably won't even bother with a dedicated app, but then do a publicity campaign that explains to people. And that way you get the whole dynamic sort of audience reach. You get everything from, you know, teenagers up to people in their 50s and 60s. And because Google Cardboard is so cheap, it makes it accessible to everyone. So that might heighten the interest. But, you know, again, it's really hard to predict how it's going to go, because it really is an extremely different experience to what people are used to. And if 3D, going back 5-6 years ago, and the evolution of that was anything to go by, sometimes the technology world can get extremely exercised about new technology, and the audience, they just don't get it.
Inga Thordar, editorial and programming director at CNN Digital International, sees a lot of potential for 360-degree video.
I think 360 videos are becoming pretty mainstream now, and seeing them on the social platforms is exciting people. A lot of organizations don't have 360 video players on their platforms. So I think probably in 2016, we're going to see more organizations moving into that they can publish their own 360 videos and don't have to rely on social for it anymore. I mean, they're a very engaging experience, and they really straddle those three sort of points that I think for 2015 were the highlights that we'll take into 2016. I mean, they're a very mobile-friendly product. They're a social product, and they normally tell a story and take you to the place, which is what people want from digital journalism, is to kind of really feel like they're part of the story. So, I mean, they're really an amazing way of telling stories. And since we're on the topic of video, CNN has been experimenting with virtual reality, and I think that's another video sort of element that we're going to see really rise in 2016. The live streaming of the GOP debate was a first for any news organization, and it was viewed in multiple countries. So we are going to aggressively pursue more video sort of VR experience in the future.
So 360-degree video ticks three boxes of interest to publishers. It's social, immersive, and mobile. And of course, 2015 has once again seen a huge focus on mobile storytelling styles and products from news organizations. Audiences have increasingly been using mobile phones and tablets as their device of choice to read the news. In the UK, 5 national newspapers now have a majority mobile-only audience for their online presence, according to numbers reported by the National Readership Survey in 2015. So what's changed this year in the way news organizations are looking at mobile?
I think on mobiles, the main thing is that you started seeing the absolute sort of dominance of mobiles. When we were looking at our pie chart of where people were consuming, mobiles was always sort of around, you know, skirting the 50% mark in the previous year. But I think in 2015, it became, you know, it really went past that line and it started growing and maintaining that growth. So I think certainly, you know, I think it always changes your mindset when you start seeing, you know, a substantial growth like that and a consistent growth. So I think that's the kind of main thing on mobiles. And of course, you know, with every single generation of phones that come out, be it on Android or on the iPhone, the quality of the picture and the quality of the phone itself goes up. And it allows us as broadcasters and digital organizations to produce content that is more exciting and more engaging to the audience.
Jane Singer, Professor of Journalism Innovation at City University London, says this year marks a shift in the way news outlets see mobile.
Thinking of it, you know, not just as an extension of the web, but as a whole different beast, which is very much like how they first thought about the internet. You know, first it was just an extension of the newspaper or, you know, a way to put your, you know, their scripts from your TV program online. And, you know, after a while, longer than you might have thought, they started thinking about it. A journalist began to, you know, really think about it, what it could do on its own. And I think that's kind of where we are with mobile. I think we're, you know, they've been doing mobile for a while, but they've sort of been doing it as an extension of the web. And I think there's a growing creativity in thinking about it as its own creature.
And audiences have also been using their phones to do some reporting of their own, including live broadcasting via live streaming app Periscope, which launched in April this year. Mark Frankel, social media editor at BBC News, says Periscope streams have become useful eyewitness media in breaking news situations in the last few months.
It's been a big development in the last year. I mean, one of the things we noticed on some of these big terror attack stories, particularly with Paris, actually, with the numbers of people, members of the public who turned to Periscope, for example, to use, you know, to broadcast directly on what they were seeing. We probably, in the first 24 hours, witnessed, you know, well over a dozen very usable slices of a video through Periscope. It really enhanced our experience on the story because we were able to get very close to some of the drama and some of the mayhem as it unfolded and use that in a contextualized way alongside our journalism to make sense or try to make sense of what was going on. So I think the way in which people are using live streaming videos, particularly Periscope and Facebook mentions in the last 6 to 12 months, together with the willingness of broadcasters and news organizations to take it more seriously within the ecosystem of their own journalism, has definitely been a trend.
Another trend that marked the relationship of news organizations and social media has been the drive among social networks to establish their own editorial initiatives, such as Facebook Instant Articles or Twitter Moments. News organizations have also focused on producing short-form videos that are often published straight on social networks. Mark Frankel also highlighted how relatively new platforms such as Snapchat or WhatsApp have matured and have offered a better proposition to publishers in 2015, and also pointed to the importance of other chat apps with growing user numbers that provide an opportunity for news outlets to reach underserved audiences. He explains how chat apps have evolved over the past 12 months.
The difference between, say, last year and this year has been the numbers of people who are on them, and therefore the numbers of people who are coming to news organisations like BBC News with relevant information on breaking and developing news stories. So, for example, with the Nepal earthquake earlier this year, we found that a huge number of people came to us with relevant messages, text messages and video and photographs as eyewitnesses to what was going on. And a lot of that content we were able to surface very quickly into our live blogs. and that was hugely beneficial to us. We found the same and have found the same on a number of breaking stories, be it Paris, the attacks there, the bombing in Bangkok, the incidents, you know, the terror attack in Tunisia. Chat apps have played a very big part in our storytelling news gathering on those particular events as they've unfolded, almost irrespective of what part of the world it's happened in. You know, for example, one of the first alerts that we had to the crash at Alton Towers earlier this year was via somebody on WhatsApp, you know, several minutes before we actually saw and read anything on the news wires. And as I said, at the same time, we were getting very early alerts on things happening the other side of the world, you know, earthquake in Nepal and terror attacks in other places.
Another development this year has been the growth of anonymous chat apps such as Yikyak and Telegram. The latter has recently become known as a channel the so-called Islamic State uses to distribute propaganda.
We have our BBC monitoring team fixed on looking at accounts that spring up through Telegram that are related to so-called Islamic State. But of course, there are ways of using anonymous apps like Telegram to reach audiences that are hard to reach in normal circumstances. And for example, we launched a Telegram account on BBC Persian not that long ago, and within, you know, a short space of time we had several hundred thousand subscribers to that, which was interesting to see. And we're always in the market for new and innovative ways of reaching audiences through chat apps. I mean, you mentioned Yikyak. We experimented with Yikyak over the Canadian elections. I think there will potentially be more to do in partnership with them as we go into a US election cycle in 2016. And I think there are a number of other anonymous apps that will evolve into next year as well, some of which we probably haven't even heard of at this stage. But clearly there is an appetite from members of the audience that we serve and members of the public more generally to think of and use chat apps to communicate without the public sort of profile that some of these other services, social media networks, offer. And it's become a more attractive way for people to share and consume information, and therefore becomes more of a challenge to us as news organisations to try and find innovative ways to reach people in those spaces.
But new technologies and platforms aren't the only elements that made the mark on media organisations this year. Having the latest technology doesn't amount to much if you don't have a good story. And an interesting development in news coverage in the past year has been a change in the distance between the reporter and the story. Jane Singer explains.
One way to look at some of the really good journalism that was done and some of it that was maybe done a little bit differently was journalists thinking about kind of how they can be a part of a story in a productive way.
As an example, she points to New York Times journalists traveling alongside refugees to cover the story.
Some of the explainer sites are kind of along those lines, although they're taking a little bit of a different approach. But I think we're seeing personal journalism is the wrong word because it's not about the journalist, but journalism that's really focused on the human side of a story from kind of within the story in some ways. And I thought there were some kind of interesting examples of that. Again, the New York Times one kind of springs to mind. I think journalists are, they have been all along, and they get more and more tools to do this, and they become, you know, even better at it, really aware of their role in a digital world of making sense of the information. You know, this is, you know, all the metaphors are out there about the fire hose and, you know, all this vast quantities of information that are out there. And I think journalists are increasingly focusing on their role in interpreting that. So I guess that's a more personal form of journalism as well, from a little bit of a different angle. I think that's kind of interesting trend in storytelling, that it's less, there's less distance, maybe that's a way to think about it. There's less distance in some ways between the journalist and the story. And I think that's an interesting trend to watch. I think it is already and will continue to lead to very engaging journalism, because we engage not just with the people in the story, but we engage with the way the story is being told and the experiences of the teller. It's kind of interesting that that's happening. And virtual reality, in a way, is a part of that, because, of course, that's a very immersive storytelling technique as well. So to me, that's an interesting trend that I see.
Inga Thordar also highlighted the need for more journalism focused on explaining and contextualizing news.
2015 has been an exceptional news year. There have just been so many stories and so much happening in the world. And so I think more than anything, what 2015 means to me, regardless of how we bring the news to people, is really the need for news and for the need for news organizations to explain what's going on, to put things in context. And in that sense, for me, the kind of the necessity for journalists to kind of focus on explaining what's going on in the world and raising important issues, for me, that's been a really big factor in 2015.
You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.